Good afternoon. I'm calling the Taxes Committee to order for March 30th, 2023. First item of business is approval of the minutes. Vice Chair Norris.
I move the minutes from the March 23rd meeting of the Tax Committee.
Vice Chair Norris has moved the minutes. I almost called you Vice Chair Minutes. I'm not going to not do that. Okay. Vice Chair Norris has moved the minutes. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. The minutes for March 23rd, 2023 are adopted. So thanks, everybody, for being here. There's a quorum of the committee present. Thank you so much to the members of the public that have joined us. We always love having company in Tax Committee. It's sometimes a little lonely here, so we appreciate the participation from people who are interested in House File 100, which is our sole matter in front of the committee today. So welcome to the committee, Representative Stevenson. I'm going to move that House File 100, the eighth engrossment, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. I understand there are two authors' amendments, Representative Stevenson. Good if we go ahead and adopt those. All right, so the first is the A86. I'm going to move the A86 amendment. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Motion carries, and the A86 is adopted. Did you want to speak to the amendment? Or do you want to kind of, I mean, we can do it kind of like how you'd like. We can adopt them, and then you speak to the whole amended bill, or you can talk through the amendments if you'd like. Although we already adopted the A86. Did you want to say anything about it?
I'm trying to, I think the 86 was the one that I had the oral amendment to.
Okay. Can I, like, unmove something? How does this work? Oh, okay. Representative Lee has moved that we reconsider the motion on the A86. So I'm going to remove, I don't know what to do. Go ahead. Remove the motion and then do the oral amendment?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to move the A86 amendment. And I understand that the author has an oral amendment to the A86. We vote to vote on the motion to take it off the table? To reconsider. Okay, cool. I'm like a really good chair, Zach. I swear it's fine.
I know, you are.
Okay. All right. All those in favor of Representative Lee's motion that we reconsider the A86, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No.
No.
All right. So the motion prevails, and the A86 is back before the committee. And now I believe there's an oral amendment. Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, I hope you would be willing to consider on line 25.26 changing the reference from paragraph C as in cat to paragraph D as in dog. This corrects a typo.
All right.
Do I move a motion?
Is there any discussion on the oral amendment or questions? All right, I'm going to move the oral amendment.
Do I have to say it?
And then we'll have Ms. Hagler describe the oral amendment.
Madam Chair and members, the oral amendment would be on page 25, line 26, strike C, and insert D.
All right, is there any discussion on the oral amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed, please say no.
No.
Motion carries, and the oral amendment to the A86 is adopted. All right, so I'm going to move the A86 amendment as adopted. Is there any discussion on the motion? As amended. Didn't I say that? No. The A86 amendment as amended. Is there any discussion on the motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion carries, and the A86 amendment as amended is adopted. All right, and so there's a second author's amendment, the A87. I'm going to move the A87 amendment. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the A87 amendment is adopted. Representative Stevenson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is the bill to legalize adult-use cannabis in Minnesota. And I'm sure that most members have seen this in another committee by now. I think this is either the 13th or 14th hearing we've had in the House this year. So I won't go through the bill in detail. I'll just talk a little bit about the tax implications of what we're doing today, and in particular the reasoning behind the A87 amendment that was just adopted by the committee. So in the A86 amendment, we did change and update the compacting language relating to Minnesota's relationship with the 11 sovereign tribal nations in Minnesota that co-locate with Minnesota. And that does have tax consequences, because figuring out the tax relationship as adult use cannabis is sold, potentially by tribal enterprises, will be significant. And then we did also adopt a number of pieces of technical assistance proposed by the Department of Revenue, as well as some good tax policy provisions, including a proposal that's analogous to posting, the posting requirements in the liquor industry, that originally was brought forward by Republican members of the Commerce Committee, and DOR worked on that and came forward with a proposal to do that, and we just incorporated into the bill, and I'm grateful for that. In the A87, we did set the tax rate for the first biennium on gross receipts tax at 8%, and that, of course, sits on top of the regular sales tax, which percent which varies depending on where you are in the state. But for the first biennium of this budget that we would do this year, this session, the tax would be 8%. In the second biennium, it would be 5.25%. And then after that, the tax rate will be set depending upon the costs of the regulation of the bill. So the theory behind this bill from the beginning has always been that we are not doing pot for potholes. We are not legalizing cannabis in order to fund other enterprises of state government. We think that cannabis should be self-sufficient, and that the licensing fees and tax revenue generated by cannabis should flow to what is necessary to effectuate the cannabis bill, but not go beyond that. And this amendment allows for that. There is kind of an interesting aspect of this in that because if we, you know, are successful in passing House File 100 this year, it will take some time for the agency to be stood up and the rulemaking to happen and the licenses to be issued, and so we won't start selling legal cannabis in Minnesota right away, but we will be incurring costs. And so the current fiscal note for the bill, and it's worth noting that a revised fiscal note that reflects all the amendments that have been adopted in the various committees is underway, and we do expect it soon, but as of this exact moment, we do not have a final fiscal note. But the earlier fiscal note showed with an 8% gross receipts tax a cost to the state of $46 million in the biennium. So what the amendment, the 87 amendment does is establishes that the tax rate will be 5.25% in the second biennium. And in doing so, the state in the second biennium would generate 49 $1 million in excess of the cost of the bill. In other words, repaying the first biennium, in effect, but not going beyond that in further surplus. So that is why that number was chosen. And as the when we get the updated fiscal note, it would be the author's intent, and I think reflected in the will of the committee as adopted by this amendment, that we would continue to try and keep the two biennia in balance, that any cost in the first biennium would be paid back to the state in the second, but that we wouldn't go further than that. And then the last piece of the 887 says that directs MMB and other agencies to work together to set a gross receipts tax in future years that covers the cost of the bill but doesn't go beyond that. And there are a few examples in other areas of law where we have a similar system set up that we drew upon in coming up with that language. So that's my explanation of what I asked the committee to do today on the tax provisions, and also what I intend to do going forward, which is as we get a fiscal note, keep the two biennia in balance, but not have a significant surplus in the tails.
Thank you very much, Representative Stevenson. So we're going to hear from the public, and then we'll move to member discussion afterwards. First up, Matt Hilgart, and on deck is Alex Hassel. Hi.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. It should be no surprise to the members of this committee that our membership's view on this particular topic is as diverse as the state. I receive calls on this issue. It's one of the more popular issues within our membership. I receive calls in favor of it and calls with concerns, and they do not fall neatly within political or geographic boundaries. That said, AMC has been analyzing the impacts of potential legalization on our operations and clients we serve for the last 3 years via an AMC Cannabis Advisory Task Force. And we've really focused our concerns and input in three general areas: the issues of local control, the issues of a strong, well-supported state-regulated market, and the third is a recognition of local costs and impact through revenue sharing. And I'll focus my comments, Madam Chair, to that third point today. To this last point, AMC is joining the League of Minnesota Cities and asking members to consider finding a way to share local revenue, share revenue sources with local governments to make sure that they do cover the costs of potential legalization. We have offered trying to say something like a quarter percent of or 25% of that 8% gross sales tax receipt, and to put that in just kind of frame that up for members, that would potentially, depending on what the spreadsheet is showing, show anywhere from $8 to $13 million. And resources for local governments to help with compliance, enforcement, public health, et cetera. I do want to thank Chair Stevenson for his willingness to meet with local government organizations throughout session, and Madam Chair, also to you. You've met with us for the last 3 years. I know that we are not in a point of agreement. I have no assumptions that today we'll adopt an amendment that does do that local revenue sharing, but I would point out that most states who have gone down the road of adult legalization do afford their local governments some sort of revenue sharing, whether that's through the gross receipt sales tax or through local option sales tax. I think you've made a good point, and same with the author, of making sure that the sales tax is a general, clean, neat, and low rate so that we're not encouraging an illicit market and we're not making the litmus for getting into the industry too high. But in this bill, all the state agencies are taken care of through that revenue sharing, but no local government is. And so we would just ask that as conversations continue on this topic, that the legislature keep in mind those local costs and hopefully find a way to further strengthen that partnership with local governments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Alex Hassel. And Sky Rossi is on deck. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Alex Hassel. I am with the League of Minnesota Cities. Throughout session, the League has been very invested in this bill as it has progressed, particularly as it relates to the role of local governments in the regulatory structure as partners with the state. As the bill has moved forward, there's been a lot of discussion of wanting the bill to pay for itself via the tax rate And while the bill does fund the various state agencies that will be impacted by the legalization of adult-use cannabis, it does not at this time recognize the local costs expected to be seen from some of the unique challenges that this industry does bring. As we've seen from other states, the legalization of adult-use cannabis will increase city costs in several ways, including but not limited to combating the illicit cannabis market and organized crime. This is a shared goal that we do have with this bill. But we also anticipate that the illicit market will continue to be a challenge that will require effort and resources from cities to combat. We also expect to see increased costs from managing traffic safety, conducting compliance checks, dealing with unlicensed retailers and illegal cultivation on public lands, and nuisance complaints from home growth operations. We share these examples not in opposition to the legalization of adult use cannabis, but in recognition that there will be significant impacts to cities with this new industry. Under this proposal, local governments would not receive any revenue from the proposed gross receipts tax, which would make Minnesota one of the only, if not the only, state with legalized adult-use cannabis that does not provide either taxing authority or cannabis revenue to local jurisdictions to respond to these challenges. I also would like to thank Chair Gomez and Representative Stevenson for their willingness to discuss this with local governments. With this new industry, there are a lot of considerations to take for the revenue that we know that you're working to balance. So we do see local funding as a critical component to this bill, funding itself, and hope that you'll consider potentially adding this as this bill moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Up next, Sky Rossi.
Chair Gomez, thank you for this hearing and the opportunity to speak. My name is Sky Rossi. I'm a partner at Greatest Hits. We are interested in creating a mezzo business here in Minnesota and have a diverse mix of people as founders and investors in this group. Madam Chair, we appreciate all of the work you and Chair Stevenson have put into this bill and the openness for input. We are fully in support of HF 100 and the many benefits it will provide to the residents of Minnesota. I've worked in the local music industry for over 20 years and have worked to support similar equity goals contained in this bill for legal cannabis. There are many similarities in this model we've created with our record store, assisting the creation of a truly local market. We believe in the benefits of legal cannabis flowing to Minnesotans, including those most affected by prohibition. The tax structure contained in this bill is critical to helping us deliver that. Keeping the overall tax rate for our customers to under 20%, as it is in this bill, when combining excise and local sales tax, that allows businesses like ours to invest in local benefits, hiring and training of those who need a second chance, and to provide high-quality, safe products to Minnesotans. It will also help those without access to the significant capital it will take to succeed in this industry, an opportunity to start and grow their own businesses, creating generational wealth in Minnesota's diverse communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. So since we had, moved the time of the committee, I think a couple of folks who were planning to testify weren't able to make it, so I'm just going to read their names off in case they are here. Kayla Faring or Faring, Heather Bacchus, and John Dugas. Not seeing anybody get up, so we're going to move on with the list. Up next is Ted Gallaty. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Committee. My name is Ted Gallaty. I'm the owner-operator of Willow's Keep Farm Hemp Maze, Minnesota, in Zumbrota, Minnesota. We obviously grow hemp for our hemp maze and now our cannabis golf course. We also have a farm store where we sell our CBD and cannabinoid products. We are also the owner of Old Pine Theater, where, again, we sell our products. And we are adding another location, another farm in Hagar City, Wisconsin, called Sacred Mounds Farm, where we have Hemp Maze, Wisconsin. Why am I here? The 8th and Grossman now has hemp in it 1,251 times. I've asked for you to take hemp out of this bill. You're going to destroy businesses, farm processors, and farm retailers that are growing hemp specifically for cannabinoid production. This is a marijuana recreational bill, and I think we need to just call it for what it is. That's what it is. We're trying to legalize marijuana. I know why hemp is in the bill now. I've looked at the fiscal note. I've looked at the tax structure. It's to take money from the hemp farmer, the hemp processor, the hemp retailer. This is going to drastically affect every hemp farmer, retailer, and processor come July 1st, 2023. Fiscal note, HF 100, HF3A and then HF100 amended 87. Talks about the 8% added tax to the general excise tax of 6.875 plus any county or city municipal tax. I know that that'll ratchet down in 2025. It'll go down to 5.25. Here's the question I have. So we're looking at a 14.875 tax plus the county and the municipalities. It's going to be taxed on the low dose. We shouldn't call it low potency. That's a horrible term. Low dose THC products that are derived from hemp. Most of my products have CBD in it that are low dose because that downs the high. And most people, when they ingest 3 milligrams, 5 milligrams of THC, you don't get high, okay? So let's be honest about it. In 151.72, the state statute that's existing right now, it says hemp is not a drug. You say that. You're going to hold that. You're going to carry that 151.72 until July of next year, 2024. What you're going to do, though, is you're going to end up taxing hemp. Right now it says July 1st, 2023, that you're going to start taxing these low-dose hemp products at that 15%. That's so that you can set up your office of cannabis management. To be honest with you, I'm not really a proponent of the recreational side. But you're making me. You're riding my back so that you can have the legal recreational marijuana. That's the facts, okay? And I don't want to see that happen to me or any of these other farmers or any of these other processors or retailers because we're going to lose our butts, okay? People are going to go online and buy their CBD products because it also says any cannabinoid product. The only thing that's safe is the topicals, right? The salves, the rubs, the muscle creams. That's considered industrial hemp along with the fiber and grain. But any cannabinoid product is subject to this tax. You need to look at this bill. You need to think about this bill. You're going to destroy families. Lots of your family and your parents and are using the products, and they're going to go online. They're going to go out of state to buy the products now. Okay? Hagar City's looking a little bit better now. But I want you guys to really look at that because we shouldn't be taxing hemp. We should not be taxing something that's considered not a drug. And I know I'm running out of time, but we also had some other people that didn't come to testify today. So I'm going to really just quickly hit points and then be done. In the 2018 Farm Bill, hemp, cannabis sativa, anything below 0.3% Delta-9 THC, including seeds, derivatives, extracts, cannabinoids, isomers, acids, salts, whether growing or not, on a dry weight basis. There it is. I already said 151.72. Edible cannabinoid products means any product that is intended to be eaten or consumed as a beverage by humans contains a cannabinoid in combination with food ingredients and is not a drug. You're putting a syntax on something that is not a drug. Okay. Again, I said you're riding the backs of the hemp farmers. The last thing I want to touch on real quick, licensing. Right now, you're going to put a license on, again, the low-dose hemp-derived THC products, $250. The estimation is there's going to be 5,000 of them. That's $1.25 million in the year 2024 to, again, support the creation of the Office of Cannabis Management and the Legal Recreational Marijuana Program. Be honest with yourself. That's what you're doing. You're riding hemp all the way. Don't do this. Don't destroy my business. Don't destroy the 50 other people that I sit now with and talk with because of my voice. I felt along the way you guys have been listening, but I don't think you're listening. 1,251 times you have hemp in this bill. This is a marijuana recreational bill. I thank you for your time. Please take hemp out of the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Galati, for your testimony. Mr. Galati also submitted a letter, which is in our packets. There were some other, I don't know if some of these other testimonies are from people who couldn't be here, but everybody just note that there is some written testimony for us to review. Next up, Keith Groenhoved. Maybe we lost him, too. All right. Glenn McElfresh, if you're here. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you go ahead with your testimony.
Chair Gomez, committee members, and Representative Stevenson, thank you for allowing me to testify today on HF 100. My name is Glenn McElfresh, and I'm a co-founder of PLIF, a black-owned hemp-derived beverage company successfully operating in Minnesota. For background, I've spent the past 10 years working in the cannabis industry across the country, including many rural and majority minority communities. Many cannabis businesses prefer locating in rural communities in order to create rural jobs and have their assets taxed on an agricultural basis. Bless you. We have many farmers and agricultural communities right here in Minnesota that are benefactors of similarly reduced tax rates meant to encourage farming for generations. However, farmers who often need those tax breaks in order to survive from year to year will lose that benefit if they decide to cultivate hemp or cannabis. Their property tax rate would double from 1 to 2% as outlined at 3.18 in the 86th Amendment. This language hurts farmers who wish to innovate and the growing percentage of greater Minnesota farmers who are just doing their duty to be good stewards of the land. Many large-scale row crop farmers plant hemp as a cover crop because hemp returns nutrients to the land and requires minimal water inputs. Not to sell hemp or any hemp byproducts, why are we punishing these farmers? But the tax pain isn't limited to just greater Minnesota. The cities hurt too. The 8% gross cannabis tax applies to the entire transaction, including all non-hemp or non-cannabis items, not just the cannabis or hemp byproducts. A family of four could expect to pay an additional $10 in taxes on a $100 dinner if mom or dad enjoys a Minnesota-made THC seltzer. This bundled tax will have disproportionately negative impacts in communities that have been most impacted by the war on drugs, which disproportionately includes communities of color, as these communities are often the most economically stressed. The tax code punishes farmers for growing cannabis sativa L, punishes retailers for selling cannabinoid products, and punishes consumers for buying cannabinoid products, which ultimately punishes manufacturers of these cannabinoid products. Nearly 60% of Minnesota's edible cannabinoid businesses are BIPOC or woman-owned. I'm a proud co-founder of a black-owned business myself. Yet our businesses, who collectively contribute millions to Minnesota's tax roll, must stop sales on July 1st, 2023, unless multiple provisions of this bill are changed. I would also respectfully like to ask for clarification on lines 6.13 and 6.14 in the A86 Amendment. Are hemp businesses intentionally named as cannabis businesses, or is this a typo? If this classification is not a typo, I have serious concerns that most hemp businesses won't survive until the end of the year. Representatives, I encourage you to vote no on this amendment, and I am vote no on passing this bill out of committee until these problems are fixed. Madam Chair, members, and Representative Stevenson, thank you once again for the opportunity to testify today, and I stand ready for any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. So that's the end of the folks I had signed up in advance. If there's any other member of the public who's present who wishes to testify, please come on up. All right, I'm not seeing anyone. So to member discussion. Representative Robbins.
First, thank you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I, unlike maybe the everybody else in this room, I've never heard this bill in committee yet this year, and I have a lot of work to do. but I've tried to condense my questions and focus on the fiscal note impacts. And so my first concern, honestly, which you've alluded to, is that there is no fiscal note members, and there were substantial changes to licensing in Commerce last week, and we have no idea what the impact of that is. And secondly, we also don't have the impact of the new tax structure that is proposed in today's amendment accounted for in the revenue note. So we're looking at this with substantial changes just here today in our committee without really understanding the numbers, and this is the last step before Ways and Means. And so I have grave concerns about this. We're not going, I mean, this won't be on the floor before our recess, so I don't know why we couldn't wait to hopefully get a fiscal note updated and do it next Tuesday, because I feel like this is really problematic. And to the fiscal note, because there still might be one coming, I want to raise some serious concerns about different aspects of the fiscal note we do have, so that fiscal staff, who are fantastic and who answered many of my questions yesterday, if we could try to get some of these things addressed. The fiscal note that currently is here is very incomplete. The Department of Administration shows zero costs, even though they have the responsibility in the first year of setting up the Office of Cannabis Management. I don't know how that works. They also are assuming that they will have free access to all court records, databases, paper records, and other databases necessary to do the expungements. I don't know how we can just assume free access to all of these documents, but as legislators, for example, we don't have access free to all these things, so I don't know how that would happen. In the Department of Ag, they only assume six FTEs statewide necessary to do all the scale and package inspections, the net content, the weight and labeling for 3,000 licenses. I find that hard to believe. Indeed, they admit in the fiscal note that if the programs are really administered to full capacity, it will require more staff than are available through these funds. So they're already admitting in the assumptions that the fiscal note does not accommodate everything DEET is going to need. MDH has a blank appropriations, which is also sort of stunning. They have a lot of education responsibilities, and they're assuming no costs in their fiscal note. In the Human Services fiscal note, it says there are multiple sections in this bill that DHS would be unable to implement and they're unable to provide a cost estimate for. In addition, the language does not include how grant funding for the appropriation will be determined. Finally, the rate increases are administered through DHS forecast and cannot be provided through a special revenue grant. If there is revenue appropriated, that will add cost to this section. MMB asserts that, quote, MMB says the impact of this bill is not easily quantifiable, and the MMB portion is blank. DNR is blank in the tail, saying, due to unknown effects and implementing of this bill, the possibility of fiscal impacts from rulemaking and other guidance by the new Office of Cannabis Management, we are not able to produce sound estimates of other enforcement actions required this bill. The Pharmacy Board is a blank fiscal note, and they say they expect potential litigation even when the authority is transferred from the Board of Pharmacy to the Office of Health, but they can't quantify it. The Board of Public Defense, their fiscal note is also blank, and they assume that there will be legislation that will impact criminal cases. However, the fiscal note cannot be determined due to lack of data. Members, I have more. I have another page. Almost every section of the fiscal note says they don't have adequate data. They're not clear on their assumptions. They're not clear how this is going to be implemented. I appreciate you have worked so hard on this, Representative Stevenson. I really do. But we are not ready to send this to Ways and Means or the floor. And we saw last year what a disaster that edibles bill was for our communities. We should not send this out until the work is done. Our communities, as has been testified, they are on the hook for enforcement. They are on the hook for compliance of ID checks on the grow. They are on the hook. One thing that wasn't talked about that was raised in the DNR section of the fiscal note is water treatment facilities and regulating how they are going to manage discharge for water treatment from this process. And that fiscal note was blank. So, members, I have so many concerns, and this is the tip of the iceberg. I'll let some of my other colleagues talk. I would just encourage us to slow our roll a little bit here. There is still plenty of time in this session, and there's been a lot of work that has been done, but we are not ready to send this on to the floor. And we are the last stop with the authority over the taxes. We have no idea what those impacts will be. We haven't seen the numbers. I think it's a dereliction of our duty to send this on, Madam Chair.
Representative Stevenson, do you want to talk about the fiscal note at all? I mean, I guess I'll just say one thing. There's like an updated fiscal note that will probably be available by the end of the day or tomorrow. I was part of putting this bill together, like kind of when we first started work on it in 2019. And it occurs to me that there are going to be a fiscal note is necessarily when you're establishing a whole new market, which is something that we don't do frequently here. There are just going to be some areas where we're really going to have to reassess what those costs are, how to implement this really well. And so I think that's why there is basically an agency that will be devoted to that moving forward. But I don't know if you have anything else to add about the fiscal note specifically or any of Representative Robbins' comments. Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, you know, I think that there's a lot actually that could be said about a lot of Representative Robbins' remarks, and I wish you had talked to me about it before committee, because I probably could have answered a lot of your questions and maybe corrected a few things that are inaccurate about what you were saying just now. And, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, a lot of people know that on this bill we're happy to talk and have a conversation, and I know that you weren't on a committee before, but easily could have had a conversation about those things, and I'm still willing to do so at any time. But, you know, for example, there is a revenue estimate reflecting the 86 amendment that I think is in your packet, so you do have that information that was put out. You know, I was there are appropriations to the Department of Health in here in the bill. We do have a couple of blank appropriations for local public health in the bill, and that was done on purpose because we wanted to wait for a fiscal note and to get to this committee to decide what the tax rate would be before deciding on how much to appropriate down. Which is a common practice at the legislature to have a blank appropriation while decisions are being made. This bill doesn't fall in any committee's budget target. Ways and Means is going to have a good discussion about the budgetary impact of this bill. There will be a fiscal note by the time we get to Ways and Means, and we will have an appropriation structure where those blanks will be filled in with numbers. So I think it's been a very deliberative process. I think that, I mean, we could continue about the various things that you raised. I'm happy to have that conversation also offline, but I think that some of the things that were raised are need a little bit more context to discuss fully, and others I think there's some inaccuracies that I just pointed out a couple, but I think that we are ready. Minnesotans are ready. This bill's been through an incredible amount of committees. An incredible amount of work has been done, not just by me, but by countless members of this legislature and the public, and we are ready to move forward. We are ready to pass this bill.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson. So I do appreciate that. I know you would be willing to have a conversation, and honestly, I met with fiscal staff yesterday. I was reading the fiscal note whatever day it came out, and then had committees this morning and floor, so I just haven't had time. So, but I do look forward to following up with you. But, and I'm glad you're going to continue this conversation in Ways and Means, because what concerns me about the amendment we adopted today is we are reducing the amount of revenue that's coming in, even though we haven't fully accounted for the cost. And by what I can calculate, the appropriation for a lot of this comes up to like $76 million, but the cost is $129 million, and just in the first biennium. So if we're planning on reducing the tax, I have grave concerns that we're inadequately already projecting the cost, and that will really create problems down the road. We've seen in other states where for the dollar spent, I think the cost of the state is $450 in Colorado. So the numbers aren't working out very well. And I also have real concerns about seating in the amendment we adopted today. You allow the commissioner to just reduce the rate. I know in other bills, the paid family leave, they're allowing the commissioner to raise the tax. Like, I do not think we should be delegating tax authority to an appointed commissioner. That is our responsibility as the legislature to raise and cut taxes. And so I fundamentally just think that's a bad precedent to go down. So I know other people have a lot of things to say. I appreciate that it is really something you've worked hard on. I just am afraid we're not ready yet for the state to take this on. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Lissegard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if I'm supposed to ask this question because it might get off the topic of the fiscal portion. But the gentleman, I think from Willow's Keep Farm, he had talked about hemp, and he talked about eating or consuming low doses, like 3.5 to 5, that you don't, you know, get that sense of intoxication. If you eat more of it, will it have the same effect? So therefore, it would be in this category and be a part of this. That would be my question. I don't know who would answer that. This might be.
I'm looking around.
I'm happy to.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Wislegard, I think that with the low-dose products that are on the market today, and it should be clear that there are a great many of these products. And so it's difficult to make a statement about an entire market full of tons of products that applies to all of them, right? Yeah. But with some of these low-dose, at least, let me put it this way. With low-dose products, if you take several doses, you are increasing the dose, right? So yes, you will get more of that substance in your system, which could have a greater impact upon you. But part of the issue here is that there's a ton of products out there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had to ask that question.
Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that was kind of along the lines that I was, you know, it seems like at least two of the testifiers were very concerned of, you know, the increased cost of doing business for locally owned producers of the THC products. And is it true? I mean, the analogy was made that the only reason why your goal is to spread the taxes throughout this industry so that because all the costs will be located in the new portion that's being legalized, which is the recreational use of marijuana, to help support those costs by passing it on to others so that you make it a little more palatable, so to speak, within the market.
Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Swidzinski, I appreciate the question because I think that the numbers don't bear that out at all. And so I appreciate the chance to add some clarity to that. And you can see it in the revenue estimate because, as testifiers rightly pointed out, if the bill is enacted, the gross receipts tax would go into effect this summer as applied to the low-dose hemp products that we legalized last year. And so the revenue estimate says for fiscal 24, the revenue generated by the gross receipts tax would be $10 million. In fiscal year 25, which contemplates only a partial year of legal cannabis sales, that number jumps to $32 million. And in fiscal 26, it jumps to $52 million. So what does that tell you? It tells you that cannabis is going to generate way, way, way more tax revenue than these low-dose products. So it is not accurate to say that the only reason why we're taxing hemp is to prop up the cannabis side of the piece here.
Thank you. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then my next question would be potentially to the local units of government that came before the committee. You talked a little bit about your cost as far as enforcement and kind of you're essentially left holding the bag here. And, you know, from Representative Stevenson's standpoint, you know, that's a hard to define number. And, you know, one way that you could potentially do that would to be write in the bill that the state patrol would be responsible for this. So that if there are any costs that are within enforcement, any costs that are due for regulation or oversight, that the state patrol would handle it so that you could get a really good grasp of what that actual cost would be, because my guess is a state department that's already a state department in law enforcement would potentially be able to. So if, you know, someone's acting up, someone robs the place, that it's the state patrol that would do the reaction or the enforcement, and that way you'd get a better taste for what the local units of government might be involved in.
That sounded like a suggestion to the author.
But.
Yeah, Representative Swidzinski.
Yeah, and then, I mean, do the local units of government have a rough estimate that maybe is not reflected in a fiscal note as far as counties are concerned? And then from a local control standpoint as well, I have a follow-up.
I don't know if Mr. Hilgart or Ms. Hassel wants to come up and provide some more context about the cost for local government units, local units of government.
Madam Chair, Representative Swidzinski, thanks for the question. I do think it is unclear right now, and I think the fiscal note I don't think there's actually one page that's dedicated to local government costs, but certainly every single one of our members from Hennepin to Lacaparle County believe that there will be costs. And if you look at other states that have legalized, there are costs surrounding compliance, inspections, land use, there's environmental cleanup, blight properties that can be quite costly, even if it's just one or two cases every decade. Certainly, a variety of costs, but it's unclear about just putting one static number out there. And I think that gets to our core of, we do appreciate Representative Stevenson did carve out some potential dollars for local public health agencies, which in this bill will be responsible for compliance. There's question marks next to that number, how much will that be? But certainly we'd rest a lot more easy knowing that we would have some sort of local revenue sharing to budget for in the out years.
Thank you. Representative Swinczynski.
And thank you.
Mr. Hilgart.
And this could go to anyone as far as local control piece. From a local taxation, you know, let's say, do local units of government have the right to, you know, essentially, you know, if it was a strip joint, they had it, didn't want that in their community. Most communities, as long as they had ordinance in front of them to ban strip joints, they'd be allowed to do that. Are they allowed to ban these types of establishments coming into the community?
Representative Stevenson.
Well, first of all, I think that's a really bad comparison between a strip club and a cannabis dispensary
for adults.
But I will say that no, we are not allowing jurisdictions to opt out of the cannabis bill. And this, along with the decision to keep the tax as low as possible and to not allow local units of government to add a tax on top, all of that is justified by the same policy goal of the bill, one of the chief policy goals of the bill, which is to eliminate the illicit marketplace for cannabis and its negative downstream effects. So other states, as the testifiers have said, have allowed local units of government to impose their own tax. And I'll tell you, other states have also allowed opt-outs. And what we've seen in those jurisdictions that have engaged in those policy choices is that those policies have fueled the illicit marketplace. California is the best example on the taxes. Where a very extreme local taxation has caused the price of legitimate cannabis to be far higher than the cost of illicit market cannabis, which fuels the illicit marketplace. We are going to endeavor to keep the cost of from the tax level as low as possible to try and prevent that. Same with the opt-out. Other jurisdictions have allowed counties and cities to opt out of this altogether, and that just allows the illicit marketplace to continue there. I think that the testifier just now, I'm glad that we're getting a little more complete picture of the amount of money that is going to local governments, because the testifier just mentioned that there's an expected appropriation of local public health. There's also another example would be in the bill. Currently, there's a small appropriation, but I'm expecting that it will be significantly larger for the training of drug recognition experts, which is something that we expect that local units of government will need. So there is money in the bill to address the needs that local governments will have under this bill. And actually, there is revenue for local units of government in this bill. And it's unfortunate. You have to listen very carefully, but the conversation is about revenue sharing of the tax revenue. But what is not mentioned is the bill already contemplates that local units of governments will be able to charge licensing fees of cannabis retail businesses. So they do get revenue out of this bill, and it's in some cases significant. So an example is for a cannabis retailer, they would be able to charge an application fee of $1,250, a license fee of $1,250, and a renewal fee of $2,500 for each retailer. So they will get revenue out of the bill. They will not get the tax revenue, but they will get license revenue.
Representative Swinczynski.
Thank you. Just from a licensing standpoint, will that be a multifaceted stamp for all these? So my guess is, I've heard, you know, the folks that are already in industry from the THE standpoint, will the county, city, local, township be able to layer those taxes on top of each other from a licensing standpoint? Will the county be able to have a license? And then, so if you're located within the city limits, and then will the city will be able to do that as well, or will it be at some point just a singularity of a local unit of government will be able to raise taxes or fees or whatever you want to call them on those businesses? And why do you set an amount, Representative Stevenson? It seems to me that if a local unit of government felt that their cost of, because they're being forced mean, forced to keep have these businesses in their communities, potentially next to schools. I don't know if you have any, maybe they're on buses, I don't know. You know, where does that stand if they have real costs that are above and beyond the $1,000 that they're able to charge these realtors? Will they be able to go to a city council meeting with local control and raise those actual license fees to actually reflect the cost of the forcedness of having these businesses shoved in their communities?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, a bunch of questions there. I'll do my best to get them all, and you can follow up with me if I missed any of them. Number one, we set the fee, the license fee schedule in statute because there's a lot of ways that counties and cities could choose to opt out. Even if we don't give them the formal ability, they could set the license fees at an absurd level that makes it impossible for a business to be there. So we set the license fees in statute to ensure that local governments can't opt out simply by raising the fee so high that a business could not operate there. It is one unit of government, so Section 22 requires registration with the local unit of government in which the retail establishment is located. That's lines 52 of the 8th engrossment, so before the amendment, 52.4 to 52.9. And then you asked about distance from schools. There are provisions in the bill allowing local units of government from to restrict the location of cannabis businesses with regard to schools, daycares, parks with playground equipment, family daycares. I think that's the end of the list, but I could be mistaken.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. You know, just one of the other things, just from a taxation standpoint, you know, what is the, you know, will these facilities be able to sell out of state? Will they be able to ship from there, or is it only pickup and delivery type locations?
Representative Stevenson.
I'm not sure I'm following your so you cannot transmit cannabis across state lines because it is federally not legal to do that. So the bill does not allow, for example, importation of cannabis from other states, and you would not be allowed to. I mean, there's a federal law against transmitting cannabis across state lines.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just looking at from a delivery standpoint, I know there's other sections of law that the majority is looking to increase through the transportation when it comes to the delivery, so like a DoorDash, so to speak. Will that those same taxes be attributed if someone's using a DoorDash-type delivery service to bring these products to their door? Will that be levied, and how will that be tracked within this bill?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Swazinski, this bill does not have such a delivery fee in it. So I think that your question is probably better addressed to whoever's carrying that bill. That's not in this bill.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if the department could come forward. I'd like to hear their position on this bill.
Their position on the cannabis bill?
Yes, if they support this bill or not.
You're talking about the Department of Revenue?
Yes.
I mean, Joanne, Ms. Bears?
And the reason I said back in the day, and it's your committee, I get that, but every bill I would ask for the department's position because that was important to me as we crafted a bill going forward.
I guess, I mean, I'll just... You know, the establishment of the Office of Cannabis Management and the tax treatment of cannabis was a part of the governor's budget presentation, but if Ms. Bears has anything to add.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. You know, from the governor's perspective, the governor included a bill this year in his budget that legalized cannabis. There are some differences between Representative Stevenson's bill and the governor's bill, but not a whole lot of differences.
Okay.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really don't know where to start on this. This bill is not ready for prime time, and I'm very uncomfortable without some firm numbers here as to moving this forward. We're kind of flying blind here, it seems to me, on this one. As far as the counties go, yes, they can charge fees, and I was a bit horrified when I heard this. Was I right? Was that correct? Some of the fees are like $2,500. Yes, a lot of dope to recover those fees. I think the locals could do 20. Was it 2,500 or was?
That was for the renewal. I think that yep. Representative Stevenson. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, and I moved away from the fee schedule in my on the bill here, so I could look it up if you want. But I think what I did say for renewal, it was $2,500 for that cannabis retailer license. Each license has a different application fee, license fee, and renewal fee. The renewal fee is always significantly higher than the application and license fee. And the smaller the business, the smaller the fee, to the point where we have a very low fee for micro businesses. We don't want access to capital to be a barrier for people to enter this new marketplace, but we also want the fee structure to help pay for the cost of the bill.
Thanks, Ms. Bears, for coming up. I don't think you had any more questions for her. Representative Davids.
Yeah, thank you very much. And, you know, the 2019 study of cannabis legalization in Colorado said for every dollar that was brought in, it costs different units of government $4.25, I think it was. Kind of reminds me of raising hogs. If you're losing 10 cents per pound, you raise more hogs, I guess. That makes all the sense in the world. We haven't talked about, I'm curious about the banking aspect here. How do we, because since this is illegal federally, how would Minnesota work the banking system? And it has to do with taxation because you can't really pay your taxes unless you got a place to deposit the money.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative David. So interestingly, that issue was addressed in the underlying bill and modified by the amendment that you adopted earlier today, the taxation issue, because we, you know, generally require people to remit their sales tax and gross receipts tax electronically. The underlying bill initially gave waived that requirement for cannabis businesses, contemplating that they could pay their gross receipts tax not electronically if they wanted to do that. We received technical assistance from the department that actually in other states that have legalized cannabis, there's a number of banking institutions that are now willing to do business with cannabis businesses. And so they anticipated that that cannabis businesses would be able to find financial institutions willing to take their funds and deposit them and transmit them electronically, and that they would be able to interface with the department. And so there's a couple provisions in the bill now giving the Department of Revenue in consultation with the Department of Commerce flexibility to ensure that if we can collect these funds electronically, that's how they're collected, because that is the most administratively efficient way to do it.
Representative David.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Chair Stevenson, we talk about covering costs. I see that the state departments, their costs seem to all be covered, but yes, the locals can charge fees and so forth, but it seems to me like in your bill we're covering state costs but not a whole lot for local costs. I don't know if $2,500 per business is going to cost the horrible things that are going to be happening here. A lot of times, members, I'll look at you know, who supports something and who is opposed to something, and I see that there's like three entities supporting this. And then I go over to kind of who's who of opponents. And I think it'd be wise for members to look at that, because you've got the truckers. I've talked to the truckers. They're very concerned about this. They don't know how to, you know, alcohol's easy. You're 0.08 or you're not. With this, you could be high, and how do you test that? The Trucking Association is having some real problems with this. The Chamber of Commerce, the League of Cities, the League of Counties, I mean, Sheriffs, Police Association, just go right on. They're all opposed to this. So what are we doing here? Why in the world are we doing this when those who are in charge of law enforcement are opposing this? This is a train wreck. It really is. And, of course, the biggest one on the list that opposes it here that I have concerns about is the Minnesota Catholic Conference. I mean, you know, they got direct connections places. And so I don't think that's good at all. So this bill is not ready to move forward. And the regressiveness of the taxation on this is just horrendous. I'd like to see a suits index on this thing. So we are hurting the poorest of the poor. Why do we do that? That's what this bill does. And I know it's going to pass. I get that. I was born on a day but one yesterday. And we know it's going to pass. But this is a very, very bad bill. I think the thing I'm most concerned about, well, I have a lot of concerns on this, but we just had testimony here that said this is going to be destroying farmers. We had testimony saying this is punishing farmers. Why would this legislature, why would this tax committee allow that to happen? So, you know, I'm still considering it, but I'm probably a no.
Sounds like it.
Don't bother me, the facts, my mind's made up.
Okay. Thank you for mostly confining your questions and comments to the tax provisions. Just for everybody else who wants to talk, I just want to put that out there. That is what's in front of the committee. Representative Stevenson.
Well, Madam Chair, I was impressed by Representative Davis' list of who's for it, who's against it, but he left off a very important stakeholder group, which is the people of Minnesota, and they are very much in favor of cannabis legalization. Every single poll of this shows that you don't have to take, if you don't believe polls, you don't have to. You can go out and talk to people. And you will find broad support for the legalization of cannabis in Minnesota and around the country. Minnesotans are ready for this change, and it's time for this change. I also just want a personal note. I will tell you that in my first term in the legislature, Representative Davis said one of my bills was the most terrible, worst bill he had ever seen, and now I've graduated to just a really bad bill. So there's progress, incremental progress year after year. I'm getting there.
Well done, Representative Stevenson. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Stevenson, a couple things I got a question on. You know, tobacco, the cigarette market got attacked here some years ago in Minnesota because it was trying to prevent smoking to kids and everything like that. So we went up to a real high tax on it to help with what was called at that time a health impact fee to be able to take care of helping with the impacts of smoking and what it does to you and all this. You know, and now we're introducing another product that again can be edible or anything, but also can be smoked. And we see what the repercussions were when we introduced tobacco and how tobacco had to get taxed more next to bordering states that are a lot lower, and shows a black market come across the border because people are buying them outside of Minnesota. My question is what kind of research has been done when you look at this tax on the marijuana bill? And because I think, are we doing the right thing? And also on cigarettes, it's a floor tax, so we pay it before we get it at the retail locations. This is paid after. Have we looked at any studies to have that paid like that ahead of time, so it's already projected in? But have we done any studies to see if down the road we're going to have to increase this tax because of the effects, what it's going to do to medical, to mental illness, anything like that, or law enforcement, or anything like that? You know, we're going to have to create higher and higher tax to continue this, or should we study it to make look at the tobacco industry and what's taking place in Minnesota and what we need to do in this recreational marijuana study? So just a question.
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, and Representative, a few things on that point. One is there are significant differences between cannabis and tobacco, but accepting the comparison, even though I'm not sure I totally like it, the important thing to understand is we're starting from very different places with these two substances. So with tobacco, we had a very, very permissive regulatory regime, you know, decades ago, right? Tobacco was available. You get in a vending machine, probably in this building, right? Where cannabis is starting in a place of complete prohibition. And so where your goal in terms of managing tobacco starts from trying to legally control it and try and move people away from it and control the public health aspects of it, what we're trying to do on cannabis is address a prohibition policy that's failed and then eliminate an illicit a black market. And that requires a very different tax treatment. As I mentioned, the choice to have a low tax rate on cannabis is in part driven by a desire to eliminate an illicit marketplace that will persist and in fact be fueled if we have the tax rate too high. And there have been, there's been a ton of studies on cannabis, and there's been a ton of studies on cannabis and kids. And the one thing that I will note that might surprise committee members is that in states that have legalized cannabis use has increased. Okay, that does happen, but actually, teen smoking of cannabis in states like Colorado and Washington has been constant, flat over the decade that they've had it legalized. Instead, almost all of the increase in cannabis consumption comes from older people, from people 50 years of age or older. That is where you see the growth. And I don't know if that's directly responsive to your question, but I just think that's an interesting fact that I'd like to share.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I also just wanted to mention that, like, there's not a documented case of somebody dying because of smoking cannabis, and, you know, upwards of 450,000 people a year die because of complications that are related to smoking tobacco. So just wanted to put that out there. But Representative Joy.
No, I was just real quick, Madam Chair. That was just a follow-up that I guess what I'm hearing in this committee is when you smoke and you get lung disease or anything like that, smoking cannabis or something like that won't do that to you, is what you guys are kind of alluded to, is that there hasn't been any cases that smoking it will cause that effect, so we don't have to worry about taxing anymore. Is it right? Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, I don't know if that was for me. That's not what I said. I just said there was...
Anybody.
I don't think either any of us said that, but okay. If you want to make a statement about it, you're welcome to. But okay, thank you. Okay, so we're going to go to Representative Anderson next. We have Robbins and Swedzinski back on the list. Okay. Yeah, if we could just, you know, keep it to the tax provisions and brief if possible so that Representative Davids can get on the road. Representative Anderson. Not that we want him to leave town, obviously. Representative Anderson.
Or maybe you do. thank you, Madam Chair. And I will stick to the tax. Actually, my question is about hemp and what the thought process is to bring hemp in under this, treat it similarly. And I guess why?
Representative Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yeah. So we said at the very beginning that with regard to the low-dose products that were legalized last summer, that we wanted a comprehensive regulatory and taxation regime that treats those along the same lines of the adult-use cannabis that we're legalizing in this bill. And there are actually some differences that have evolved along the way, but we do want a lot of the same consumer protections and regulatory features, and thus those do cost money, and so we want also to have a consistent tax rate between those things. I do want to say hemp farming, for example, is not, you know, a regulated thing by this bill. You don't need a license to be a hemp farmer under this bill. So there are some differences. You need a license to be a cannabis cultivator to grow cannabis under this bill, so there are differences. It's also the case that there's a federal difference. Hemp is a federally legal product. Cannabis is not.
Thank you. I also did just want to mention that my understanding is that in terms of the property, the classification rate for property taxes is that hemp production will remain an agricultural classification, not a commercial industrial. The commercial industrial classification rate that kind of classification would only be applied to land where cannabis is and not hemp is produced. But Representative Anderson.
Thank you. So then why bring it in at all? Why regulate and bring hemp in at all besides the $10 million up front? I guess that's my...
Representative Stevenson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm sorry if I wasn't clear a second ago. I said that the low-dose products that we legalized last summer, we want them to be treated the same. We think there should be consumer protections and other things associated with that, and so it should be taxed in keeping consistent with cannabis. So, for example, this bill, right now you can buy a low-dose hemp-derived cannabis product, you know, in gas stations and grocery stores, and it can be right out in front, right? And we are moving it behind the counter under this bill, just like we in this bill require cannabis to be controlled. So we are recognizing that these substances, you know, while there are obviously differences in the bill and different treatments, that there are issues that need to be addressed with both of them, and they should be taxed and regulated at a level that is similar, although recognizing some appropriate differences.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's a big difference between them. So.
Okay, thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. I will be brief. I just had two questions listening to this. First, because I did get a call about this from a constituent, too, and in the Amendment 87 that was adopted today, it does say that if a product is bundled in a single transaction with other stuff not subject to the tax, the entire sales price of the transaction is taxed. And so the restaurant example or the convenience store example, so if someone buys a beverage with cannabinoids in it, and that individual product is taxed, can they separate that out and just that beverage gets the 8% tax, or is the whole meal, the whole order at the convenience store, whatever, the whole thing taxed?
I'll go to Representative Stevenson. Our nonpartisan staff may also, okay, maybe Ms. Hagler, I don't know if you have anything to add.
Madam Chair and Representative Robbins, I'm sorry, can you just repeat your question?
Sure. In line 1.15 of the 87, it talks about how if you have one product that's subject to the tax, but the rest of the transaction is not, the whole thing seems to be subject to the tax. I just want to make sure we're all understanding what that amendment does.
Madam Chair and Representative Robbins, I believe that is standard language for a gross receipts tax like this. I believe it works the same way that the alcohol gross receipts tax works. Madam Chair, if you could give me 1 minute, let me just look at the statute.
Yeah. Do you mind? We'll go right back to you, Representative Robbins, but we're going to just go to Representative Davids quick, I think.
Oh, yeah, real quick. No, I don't mean to butt in line.
No, please go ahead.
I got beat up once because I budged into the lunch line. It really hurts.
Yeah, maybe we'll actually have the department come up because I think it sounds like I'm interested to hear if I'm paying an extra 2% when I buy like a juice at the liquor store, though. That's fascinating. I had no idea. Anyway, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. Jim Jordan, attorney at the Department of Revenue. Representative, so the bundled transaction concept is a standard sales tax concept. I am going to take another look at the language based on the feedback that you've given and I've seen in the written comments today. But essentially, think about Pez when you buy it as a kid, when you get the dispenser with the actual Pez items. If they're sold as a single item, one price, that's what we mean by bundle. So the intent is certainly not to say if you've got a grocery cart full of goods, that if you have one taxable item, then the whole cart is subject to the grocery receipts tax. It's just when products are bundled together, given a single price, that's when the grocery receipts tax would apply to the entire item. Does that make sense?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Robbins. I learned something new today about sales taxes. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. And, yeah, if you do get any additional clarification, I would just love to see that because I think that is a point of confusion, not only for myself but from other people I've heard from. So just having real clarity on that would be great. Thank you. Can I have one more question?
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I did want to go back to the whole banking issue because I do find this troubling. And one of the things in the Department of Revenue fiscal note, so maybe you want to stay, I don't know, was this.
We'll see once you finish your question if you want to go back to the audience.
Was this idea that the Department of Revenue is going to set up like a facility to process cash, which seems like a bank. And so I just wondered, is that going to be subject to banking rules? And is that where these loans are going to come from? And are the loans subject to banking rules? Like setting up a facility to process cash transactions, the setup is like $1.5 million, and then ongoing $500,000 for every ongoing year. So I'd just like to understand, what is that facility for? Because the revenue note certainly didn't assume people were using state chartered banks. So if you could explain on that. Thank you.
Ms. Bears.
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, those are good questions. And that was done prior to when we realized that there are chartered state banks that will now accept the money. So previously, when we did this fiscal note, we assumed that all the money would be in cash. And so at the department, we didn't want to actually have to have all the cash coming in and have it stored at our facility. And so that fiscal note was done with that assumption. We have since then talked to Commerce and others to discuss that there are chartered state banks that will now allow it to be electronic. And so that fiscal note piece will change when there is an updated fiscal note.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Very helpful. So are you no longer going to run a state facility to process cash? Is that the plan to scrap that whole thing?
Ms. Bears.
Chair, Representative Robbins, that is correct.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. So I think I'm done. I honestly, Madam Chair, would like to move to table this bill. I don't think we're ready. I would love to table it till we get the fiscal note squared away next week, bring it up in committee next Tuesday. So I would like to request that we table it just till next Tuesday.
Madam Chair.
And I'd like a roll call.
Madam Chair, maybe if Representative Robbins could hold off on that for 2 minutes.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You made an interesting comment about there's no known deaths from marijuana smoke. And I've gone to the medical journals here, and marijuana, toxic gases, tar, and carbon monoxide are 20 times higher than a regular cigarette. So if you can have maybe 20 times as much, makes it so you're less likely to get cancer. I'm not sure. But this stuff is, like, bad. It's worse than cigarettes, like quite a bit worse. And I also went to the Vatican, and Pope Francis did not support this bill.
I think that's important to know.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Representative Davids. I believe that I didn't hear anything that refuted what I said in my comment, though, but thank you for that. So Representative Robbins has moved that the bill be tabled. She has requested a roll call. Ms. Sabas, or I mean, I don't think that's a motion. I don't know. Is that like a favor? I don't know. Yeah, you can only table it.
Just to clarify, I move that we table the bill. Thank you.
All right. Representative Robbins has moved that the bill be tabled. Ms. Sabas will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Chair Gomez, no. Vice Chair Norris?
No.
Vice Chair Norris, no. Minority Lead Davids?
Yes.
Minority Lead Davids, yes. Representative Egbaje?
No.
Representative Egbaje, no. Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson, yes. Representative Brand?
No.
Representative Brand, no. Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Elkins, no. Representative Howard?
No.
Representative Howard, no. Representative Joy? Representative Joy, yes. Representative Kosnick, excused. Representative Lee?
No.
Representative Lee, no. Representative Lislegard?
No.
Representative Lislegard, no. Representative Olson B?
Yes.
Representative Olson B, yes. Representative Olson L?
No.
Representative Olson L, no. Representative Pinto?
No.
Representative Pinto, no. Representative Robbins?
Yes.
Representative Robbins, yes. Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Smith, no. Representative Swidzinski?
Yes.
Representative Swidzinski, yes. Representative Wiener?
Yes.
Representative Wiener, yes. Representative Witte?
Yes.
Representative Witte, yes. Representative Joachim?
No.
Representative Joachim, no. Madam Chair, there being 8 ayes and 12 nays, and 1 excused.
There being 8 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail. The bill is not tabled. Reverting back to member discussion, Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question does revolve around the sales tax. Just kind of, as we Representative mentioned, the testifier mentioned Pez and candy and food products and sales tax and how that process works within the food portion. And, you know, one of the things that came to my mind was how we treat things like Twizzlers different than candy, because a Twizzler has a certain amount of flour content in it. So you don't actually collect sales tax on the sale of a Twizzlers, but you do potentially on a Pez because of the amount. It's considered a food product. Or a Twix. Or a Twix. A Twix. A Twix. And so, you know, my question to the body would be, or to the author of the bill. So if the THC or the marijuana is contained within a food product, let's say a brownie, something with the correct amount of flour content, would it fall within that purview of being a food product, or would it be considered a marijuana get-me-high product?
This may be some deep agriculture policy, but Representative Stevenson.
So, there are two taxes we're talking about here, sales tax and gross receipts tax. And Ms. Hagler might be able to state conclusively, but I think the idea is that the gross receipts tax apply. I don't know about the sales tax.
Ms. Hagler.
Madam Chair and Representative Swedzinski, so both taxes would apply. The provisions in the A86 amendment define these products as not a food, so it goes into the sales tax chapter and says that food does not include these specific products. So anything with a brownie or the flour content really doesn't matter. They're all just going to be subject to both taxes.
Representative Swedzinski? I'm good. Okay, excellent.
For the day.
Talk more about Twizzlers, Red Vines. Yeah. All right. Is there any further discussion? All right. Final word. He's making a face like he doesn't want to have a final word, but Representative Stevenson, any final words?
I'll just say thank you to the committee for the great discussion. Informative. I had no idea about the tax treatment of Twix. Modify my candidate purchase practices accordingly. This is an important bill. It's a good bill. Minnesotans are ready for this bill. I ask you to vote yes.
All right. And with that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 100, the 8th engrossment, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no.
No.
Motion carries, and House File 100, the 8th engrossment, as amended, is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, April 4th. We're going to meet at 8:30 a.m. All right. And we're going to be looking at some omnibus bills. Yes. Representative Swedzinski.
Madam Chair, I mean, just from a practicality standpoint, because you are choosing to meet at 8:30, I would also open up the idea if there happens to be a freshman that has not had a bill hearing.
Yeah, maybe
that
we'll might squeeze be a very one in. Be a good day for one. Okay, good point. Time. Good point.
Oh.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Representative Olson.
Madam Chair, I would remind the committee that Tuesday is not, in fact, Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. That happened.
I don't think you can with the resolution that's coming.
Thank you, Representative Olson.
I'll take it under advisement.
We will take Representative Lee's comments under advisement. All right, so see everybody on Tuesday. Thank you. With that, we are adjourned.